Welcome to the show. My name's Chris Parry. I am a journalist in the Canadian public market space, and for a long time I've been focused not solely but pretty hard on the medical marijuana industry that has emerged in this country and in the US. One of the big players in that space has been Supreme Pharmaceuticals. Not a big player in terms of sales, but a big player in terms of impact. It's a very popular company with investors. It's one that's taken a while to get its license, but promises to have the largest production facility and the lowest margins, now that it's actually starting to turn the wheels. I decided it was time to get in touch with John Fowler, who we nicknamed a while ago the T1000 for his ability to march through any obstacle. And he shared some information about what's happening at the pointy end of Canada's newest licensed public market medical marijuana company. So, again, John Fowler at Supreme Pharmaceuticals, and enjoy.
How frustrating has it been over the last several months waiting for things to happen?
I can't complain. Can't complain.
No.
It doesn't move quickly, but we were very active talking with Health Canada on a week by week basis. We always knew where we were. And look, as much as I'm sure everyone would like the whole thing to go faster for the stability of the industry as a whole, and I don't just mean licensed law, I mean quality of licensees, the reality of the program makes sense. You know, we're talking to those guys, and on a personal level, you know, they want to do their best, they want to move things forward. But the big challenge is every facility and every set of SOPs is different. Whereas a lot of these guys who have experience in traditional narcotics manufacture, or I guess regulating traditional narcotics, they say, you know, if you're going to open a new pill press or, you know, similar business, it's more or less cookie cutter. You go to one or two consulting firms, the SOPs are all the same. So the review process is much easier when you're talking, you know, 40, 50-year-old industry.
And so every weed grow is basically using different tech or different software or different people and processes. And
Exactly.
when the license came, you think that it maybe took the market a little bit by surprise? That a lot of people were sort of sitting there thinking, well, this is never going to happen.
I think the inspection did that. So if you recall in December when we announced our inspection, I think we went from the high teens to the mid-30s in a couple of trading days. Strong, you know, million shares days for a week in terms of volume traded. When it comes to the license, I think that the market had effectively priced that in. I think you saw that in the trading. And I don't mind that because in my mind, I always knew the license was coming. It was a when, not an if. You know, we've shown, we tried to put out to the market that we're very efficient operators. We're paying attention. This isn't a part-time gig for anyone, or it's not just a deal for anyone. It's a real company that we're all focused in trying to build. And I think if you recall in our early conversations, you asked me with what my plan B was, and plan B was always to make plan A work. And because of that, we never lost our focus. We never looked at anything else. And I think one of the best decisions that the board made was, to the greatest extent possible, to keep the lights on. So we recently had a contractor through who has done very active work with a number of applicants who have gotten licensed and early stage license companies. And he was very impressed with our level of organization and training. And that just goes to the fact that we're hoping to have one of the smoother transitions into operations. It's still, you know, a challenge. There's a lot of new information you get when you're on the other side of the license. But I've got a fantastic team up in Kincardine, and operations is something that I don't have to worry about too much on a day-to-day because we've spent the last 2.5 years building that team.
I think there was a point there where basically you knew you were in for a long wait. How did you keep the team together while that wait was happening? Were you just keeping them on payroll or what?
So if you follow through the news releases, we did a couple rounds of layoffs. We always kept senior management on because we just felt that we lost our momentum if we really shut it down and went dark. You know, the license is just part of the business, and the license is so slow, it's easy to see that as binary, you get it or you don't. But the reality is, take licensing out of it, there's a whole lot of business to manage, from vendors to staffing to, you know, offtake and sales. So we always tried to keep as much staff as on as we could while being, you know, prudent to the treasury and to our shareholders. But at the same time, and this talks to the, you know, energy and dedication of my team, I had a lot of guys who I laid off and came back into work on a part-time basis. You know, they came in, they knew their upside was coming. You know, they wanted to see us succeed. That's something you can't buy. You get very blessed when you're in a great community with, you know, employees and contractors that want you to succeed. And, you know, we had guys coming when things were looking a little tight last year, and contractors doing work on a promise of payment eventually, you know, laid off staff, still helping out, or at least picking up the phone when you can. I mean, As a lawyer, I've executed layoffs for other companies, and I can tell you CEOs are not calling laid off staff to ask for ideas.
So now that you've got the license, now that things are ramping up, tell me about that experience, about what's going to be required to make that happen. Do you need to raise money? Do you need to hire? Where are you at right now?
So we're in a very fortunate and very fantastic position. I think from the capital perspective, we're very comfortable with money we have in the bank. So we've got two in the bank, and we're about to close on the warrant incentive program, looking to add about another $1 million to treasury.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of immediate capital needs, we're quite comfortable. In terms of staffing, we've got 12 right now in Kincardine. We had always assumed a staff of about 25 to get the work done on this initial growth, or the initial phase of growing. But I'm just so impressed with the team that we actually think about 15 people are going to do the work we budgeted 2025 for. So that's quite good. So you're not going to see anything massive in terms of huge changes to burn or huge changes to the staffing out there in Kincardine. We're very much about making well-reasoned and deliberate changes, whether that's staffing at Supreme or staffing out in the greenhouse. Mm-hmm. And always looking to be, you know, slow and steady on our march towards being the best marijuana company in the country. And, you know, that's a long-term view. We take a very long-term view of the market, and we think we've got a business plan that's going to set us up for a lot of success.
You certainly proved a lot of naysayers wrong. There was always the chance, I guess, that any company might not move forward as quickly as they need to, or they might run out of money, and there are a lot of people on the message boards who were sort of pitching that reality towards you. How hard is it to read that stuff and know what you know and not sort of end up wading in, you know, going down the rabbit hole?
The hardest thing for me when I look at the board is not jumping in there to just tell people don't make investment decisions based on bull boards.
Yeah.
I've never been an insider when reading these before, and it's actually kind of crazy how bad some of the information is.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the naysayers, for me, it never bothered me. I always knew what we were doing was right, and mm-hmm. I always knew we were working on building a good company. And as I said, we kept busy even while we were waiting for the license. But I will say specifically, lawyers told me that I told you so was an inappropriate press release to announce the license.
I can put that press release out. I was telling people, if you don't buy this at 16 cents, you're nuts. And then next thing you know, you're up at 43. Yeah. It's like for all those shorters that might make a couple of pennies here and there, you know, the 150% that the guys who got in at 16 cents have made is pretty nice.
Yeah, no, it was the license day was probably the biggest day ever in marijuana with GW and Supreme moving ahead.
Mm-hmm.
We're obviously not up in their bracket yet, but that's obviously the goal that we're working towards. I mean,
they're
a pharmaceutical company, but they're also a top marijuana company, and they're really setting the ceiling for everybody in terms of driving that clinical research and really driving the credibility of cannabis as a medicine for Canadians and elsewhere.
So, you know, I was very interested to see when Bedrocan came out with their compassionate pricing that, you know, obviously Supreme's been talking about the same sort of thing for a while, but that there seemed to be a real camaraderie between the two companies in terms of you almost working together to try and propagate this sort of compassionate thinking around the industry. Does that go further than just Twitter, or, you know, is there any talk amongst players in the game of like, how do we make this industry really sort of work for everybody?
Certainly nothing formal, but I talk a lot with other CEOs and management of the company. I said, this is not a part-time gig for me. This is my passion. And, you know, much to the chagrin of my girlfriend and probably family and friends, it's pretty much all I talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I meet somebody and they've got any connection, it's the only thing you're going to hear from me over dinner.
Sure.
So I do like that they made the move. You know, I don't blame them that it took them a little longer to figure out the price sensitivity in the market. They're, mm-hmm. You know, a little bit newer in the industry. I've been doing this for a while, but I think it shows. And if I recall correctly, I was told by somebody who was on the most recent Canopy quarterly call that, in fact, the price sensitivity was greater than they had expected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you consider the fact that, you know, our patients are living in a country where we're used to getting compensated for our medicine, you know, through drug plans and things of that nature, to now have to be paying out of pocket and in addition paying HST on that, it's not surprising that, you know, cost prohibition is a real thing. And we saw that in the Allard case.
I think a lot of companies sort of expected that, you know, when they came in and got their license, that they would handle the premium end of the market. Certainly we heard that from Hydropothecary and from Emerald. So your stance is that when the reality sinks in is, you know, the premium side might be niche, that you know, a lower pricing, higher volume model might be the actual way to go?
In a medical market, absolutely. I mean, look at if you take out patentability, basically we're a generic drug company as our best comp, and that's the volume business. Mm-hmm. In a retail market, you know, very different. In alcohol, we're looking at 20% of the market being a premium market, and that could be very high value. But there's something a little antithetical about premium medicine. It just seems a little odd in Canada.
How long do you think it's going to be till our health insurance is covering our medical marijuana?
I'm hesitant to put a date on that. You know, I don't have.
Do you think it's a realistic viewpoint of some point in the future?
Yeah, so I can say over the 2 years that we've been talking wherever we can with insurers or people with connections to insurers, we moved a lot faster than I would have thought. In terms of, we went from, you know, it's marijuana, don't talk to me, to, you know, some really detailed questions around pricing, cost of treatment, how long of a tail the treatment will be. You know, you read very often about the deleterious effects of, you know, opioids and other treatments, which eventually impact the insurer's bottom line. So I think it is in the future. I'm just wary to put a mark on the calendar. The big push of Bedrocan's pricing and also our pricing, we always keep in mind that, you know, every dollar you take off the price per gram, I think you get that much closer to insurers coming in, because at the end of the day, it's primarily a monetary decision for them.
For sure. And not to mention the efficiency of the product in actually curing things as opposed to...
I don't think I'm supposed to comment on that, but we all read the papers.
A lot of the companies that are in the market right now, it appears, they'd never say so publicly, but it appears that they're in sort of a growth phase more than a revenue phase, that they're actively waiting for the day when Trudeau says, all right, we're recreational or close to it. If that takes longer than expected, is Supreme geared towards strong years going forward?
Yeah, so I think, like anyone who thought this industry was going to mature in 2 years and a little bit, you know, it's a startup industry, let alone startup companies. And I think, you know, many of my peers have done a great job of navigating that, some better than others. But, you know, overall, for 2 years into a new industry, I think it's going rather well. Obviously not maybe to expectations that some people were sold on, but that's a different story. Mm-hmm. In terms of the medical market, Supreme was a company that was founded on a medical only vision. I mean, recreational marijuana couldn't have felt farther away when we started this. So we look at it as a move to recreational marijuana, which is something that I do think is going to happen. I'm very close to the few MPs in the Liberal Party, and everything I see is that they're moving forward. For example, moving Eric Costin over to the legalization group, I think is a great sign in terms of commitment and also in the likelihood that MMPR or MMPR style production will be the backbone of that industry. Mm-hmm. But we're not banking our business model or anything like that. But what we are doing is making sure we have the war chest and the capacity or the scalability to capture that market when the time does come.
In your opinion, and you can either answer this as John Fowler, pot enthusiast, or John Fowler, CEO, the dispensary issue, how does that shake itself out, do you think? Would Supreme be all for a rule change that allowed Supreme to open storefronts and work under a strong regulated system? Or is it better to have another industry that handles that side of things?
So I'm a little bit agnostic to that. And the reason I say that is because the focus of the capital expenditures of Supreme to date has been on driving two key metrics, which I think are benefiting our company, our clients, and our shareholders, regardless of how the regulations change. Mm-hmm. The first for that is how to get the lowest cost per gram while still providing a high-value product. So, and I think value is an important metric, not just cost. Mm-hmm. So we anticipate coming out pretty much near, we've been debating if we're near the bottom or near the top, however you want to call that, but looking at low $2 a gram of cost with our first phase, falling very quickly to, you know, under $2, and eventually we're looking at 50, 60 cents by the time this greenhouse is built out. That's something, you know, no matter where this industry goes, recreationally, where it goes medically, even if it becomes pharmaceuticalized, that cost structure is going to put us ahead. Mm-hmm. And the second one we really focused on was the cost to expand and the mitigation of expansion risk. So when we spoke the first time, probably close to 2 years ago, you know, it was pretty ambitious to be moving into a 7-acre greenhouse.
Sure.
You know, it's 342,000 square feet of space when most people are running, you know, 40,000, 50,000, especially back then. But what the key for us was, we got a great purchase cost. We bought for about $13 a square foot. And now we can expand for a marginal cost of a little under $60 a square foot, which I think puts us as a leader in the industry on that. And from a risk perspective, it's much easier to retrofit an existing structure that already has power, already has water, mm-hmm. you know it can grow product, versus looking at a farmer's field and saying, you know, 100 acres will go there one day.
Yeah, it's an expanded license instead of a new license, right?
There's that as well, which is a huge regulatory advantage. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also a very important and sometimes overlooked operating advantage. You know, on the production side, we're going to move more and more towards a commodities business, which mm-hmm. means operational efficiencies are going to be key. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a house with a management consultant, so I know, you know, back office efficiencies are, you know, make and break companies. Mm-hmm. And having everything under one license and one management team, I think, puts us ahead in our efficiencies. And it's one reason that we're projecting such an extreme drop in cost per gram with every phase we bring online.
So talk me through the timelines for the ramping up to, you're okay to go to 40,000 square feet, is that right?
Correct.
I'm assuming that you're not going to ramp to 40,000 straight off the bat, but what does it look like over the next 6 months, 9 months in terms of how long it takes you to gear up to harvest and what your finances, what you would expect to be actually selling once you do that?
For a measure of transparency, we've got 40,000 square feet approved as our total facility. Mm-hmm. Of that, about 16,500 square feet is net growth space.
Right.
'Cause, you know, we have our level 9 vault. We have our, you know, clean room styled processing and packaging rooms. And we have a really unique and really exciting set of, let's call them drying rooms. They're really one of our secret weapons in this industry. And so we'll ramp that up right away. We're hoping to plant within the next month as soon as we can complete our first purchase of seeds. From there, it's about 3 months to go to our first harvest and about a month after that to have inventory. Beyond that, we're still waiting on some more guidance from Health Canada in terms of exactly how the sales license approval program shakes out. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear a lot of things when you're an applicant, but so far the information flow has just been fantastic when we're on the other side of license. And when we have a better idea, we'll look to give the market an update on that. But the key is, you know, we're building a company. We're looking, you know, long-term in the market. And I think in, you know, 2020, looking backwards, whether it's, you know, Q3, give or take a few weeks or give or take a few months, is not something that's going to matter to shareholders sitting and owning a portion of one of the biggest and best marijuana companies in Canada.
So you're likely to be back in that place that you were in maybe 6 months ago, where your news flow might be a little stinted for a while you're getting things together, and you're kind of going to rely on investors to be playing the long game rather than worrying about daily ups and downs.
We always play to investors, not traders. I think it's inappropriate for a CEO mm-hmm. to play to traders. Mm-hmm. We're looking for people who have a long-term vision, and I think the shareholders we have to date are one of our secret weapons as well. They've supported the company, they put in money when we've needed it, and mm-hmm. they prevented, you know, a collapse in share price. Mm-hmm. And many of them have done very well. Nothing makes me happier than a call from a guy who bought in, you know, in the teens and is sitting on stock, you know, at 30 and 40 cents. Puts a good smile on your face. In terms of the actual ramp-up plan, a lot of that is going to be market-dependent in terms of adding additional size. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the approval, what I like versus the initial licensing, it's in our hands. If we're effective operators and we nail our business plan, we nail our compliance, that improves the speed to get the grow license. So anytime that I'm the master of my own fate or the master of Supreme's fate, with the team we put together, I'm very confident that we can execute well.
And you've got the runs on the board in that respect. I mean, a lot of companies have had an inspection, then they get the notice of what they've got to fix, and they've got to wait again. You guys knocked it all out 100% when that first inspection. I mean, first off, how often does that happen? And did you suspect all along that you guys had, you know, crossed the T's and dotted the I's and had this thing in hand?
So in terms of how often it happens, I think it happened very frequently at the beginning. But I think in terms of late 2014 and 2015 licenses, I believe most companies took more than one inspection, but obviously it's imperfect information on that front.
Sure.
But in terms of my team, I couldn't be more proud of the guys who not only stepped up in the design, build, and testing. I mean, we did a lot of testing and commissioning before mm-hmm. the inspection. But really, we had a great team and a great group of advisors and counselors to just put our best foot forward, and the team just performed fantastically. I walked around that inspection with them with a huge smile on my face, that everybody knew their SOPs. They knew, you know, to what to focus on. They knew exactly, you know, how to present the facility. And I just couldn't have been more proud of the team. And I think it's a great nod to our efficiency as managers that we got that done in one inspection with zero deficiencies. And we were also able to get the license, I think, for one of the most capital efficient companies, where we spent $1 million down on the greenhouse We were able to finance the rest with debt, and we were able to spend about $5 million in capital costs to have a 40,000 square foot facility with all the built-in scalability that we already spoke about.
And you've still got warrants to pick at, and you're away.
Exactly. So you saw in December and January over the holidays, we did our first warrant incentive program. Mm-hmm. We were the first company on the Canadian Securities Exchange to do that, so that's always nice. We were able to take in $2.5 million, give or take, on very de minimis fees, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. We're working on another program now to incentivize about $1.3 million, and we're looking to get almost all of that. And the reason that a couple guys didn't invest, I have to love, they put their stuff in RRSPs for the long run, and it's too hard for them to take it out. So I can't complain about that long-term vision.
Right.
In terms of the warrant structure going forward, I'm really happy with where we're sitting. We've got about $12.5 million of warrants and options sitting under 55 cents. So, that's well within our reach.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the warrants we've issued to date, could be subject to a similar incentive program, which has worked very well for us in the past. But I think also importantly, we've put a force accelerator, so a ceiling on all of them. And when you're talking about use it or lose it, most folks tend to use it.
Yeah, for sure. Being as you're touting the cost efficiency of your production, a lot of companies now are making good money by selling wholesale to other companies. Is that wired into your business plan, or are you keeping it all for yourselves?
No, so that's absolutely part of our business plan. We're looking to focus on our operational or our competitive advantage, which is the production and the scale, and looking to, I guess, download the retail risk and share that amongst multiple producers or mm-hmm. multiple retailers, I suppose. So far, there's been actually surprising interest over the last few months, more so than we expected, at better prices than we expected. So we're looking to very quickly refine our business plan and refine our wholesale retail mix. What we've done to be conscious of capital is we've sort of framed out the wholesale and the retail planning. We're going to use to our advantage the delta between now and the sales license to really refine that, see where our assumptions are correct, see who wants to put their money where their mouth is in terms of wholesale, mm-hmm. and then decide how we're going to allocate capital to build up those systems. But so far, the wholesale looks very good. And over the medium and long term, I'm very bullish that wholesale is coming in. I mean, you saw recently Shoppers Drug Mart and Rexall are looking at the space.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be a shock to say that those are not companies that are actively looking to take on agricultural risk.
For sure.
That's something where we excel at. And also, it's an interesting timing in the marketplace in that many LPs are starting to meet their sort of maximum capacity at their current level of expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting conversation to go and say to them, look, we can provide a long-term sales agreement. So it's not one-off wholesale where you're just buying whatever we couldn't sell in the last 90
mm-hmm.
days.
Mm-hmm.
We can guarantee your strain so you can actually build a business around us as a vendor. And you can avoid that capital risk. You can download the production risk onto us. And those companies who are doing well at sales and maxing out their facilities can focus on what they do best, and that's taking care of their patients.
So all told, champagne corks. Good job, John. You've earned the nickname. The T1000 continues to carry on.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, but that's the name my family goes for now. So that I don't think I'll ever live down, and thank you for that.
I've given people much worse nicknames that they've never lived down, so I'll take that as a win.
I'll take that. Thank you.
All right, John, pleasure to talk to you again, and good luck going forward.
Yep, the only thing I could add, if it's okay, I just want to stump the website a little bit. So
sure.
For investors looking for additional information about Supreme, if you go to www.supreme.ca, you can join our mailing list and just, make sure that you're not missing any news. You had mentioned about a dark period. We did that last year. We're not planning to do that this year. And as
okay.
I said, we've been very active over the last year, and we can't wait to put the market sort of everything we've been working on. And for any patients, obviously we can't register anyone yet, but please check out www.amcan.com, AMMCAN, and you can sign up for updates as we start approaching our sales license. I also want to let everybody know that we'll be exhibiting at the Lyft conference in Toronto in May, and you can expect us to have a brand relaunch of the operating company.
Most excellent. John, you're a fucking beast. I've
said
it before, and I'll say it again, man. I'm so used to companies where it's like, this is great and this is great, but then there's this. And you guys in a situation where for many months you weren't able to answer your detractors, and your detractors were coming out and enjoying that dark time to make hay. You've proved them all wrong, and I'm very, very glad that back in the day that we talked, and hopefully between us we managed to get some people into some very good places.
Thank you very much, Chris. Give me a call anytime. Always happy to chat, and I've always been thankful for your support over the last couple of years. When we couldn't defend ourselves, sometimes you did that for us, and we always appreciate that.